Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
It was a wild, wild night in the NBA last night. Now we have the East and Western Conference final set. We're going to rewind the hands of time here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to bring in one of our very first NBA Drive Time Sports analysts, Jabari Davis, who is now with iHeartRadio. Jabari's been with us going all the way back to 2012, talking NBA basketball. And even though the segments today, they are few, far, and in between, we do get Jabari on a couple of times a year, and I'm excited to bring him back once again. Jabari, thank you for taking out the time.
Jordan, absolutely my pleasure, and I'll be honest with you, it still throws me off the fact that you just mentioned 2012, and then I think, wait, is that 12 years ago?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you for having me again.
It's a pleasure, man. I always look forward to having you on the show, that's for sure. Always look forward to the insight. And as I mentioned, last night was a wild, wild night in the NBA, so I got to get your perspective on it. Were you more blown away by the defending champs blowing a 20-point lead at home, or were you more amazed by this Minnesota Timberwolves team overcoming a 20-point deficit on the road?
Can I split the baby and say yes?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, and you know me, I won't dodge a question. I won't duck it in any way. But the answer is yes. Once Denver went up 20, I said, okay, time to put the puppies to bed. You know, this has been fun. And I'll see you next year. Not a worry. And I was already working through this upcoming week's script in my head. Like, okay, you know what? Ant showed a great job. And then all of a sudden they flip the switch. Ant has a terrible shooting night, but stays with it. Hits that big three with just about 3 minutes left to put them up 10. And at that point it was like, okay, well, I guess I was wrong. You don't necessarily anticipate the champs blowing a game 7 20-point lead in the second half, but you know what? I'm not going to blame them or fault them. I'm going to pay respect and give the Minnesota Timberwolves their due. They came. They went out to that 2-0 lead. They found a way to still scrap and win a game 7 on the road. So I honestly don't even think the blame goes to Denver. I think the responsibility here is with the Minnesota Timberwolves, the adjustments they made throughout the course of the series, and honestly, all props to them because it was an amazing series to watch.
There's no question, and I think it almost had to be a series like this for Minnesota to get the win. We can only go off of what we see, right? So we go back to games 1 and 2. This looks like it's going to be a short series. Maybe it gets back to Denver. Maybe the Nuggets get to game 5, but Minnesota gave us a laugher in game 2, and then all of a sudden, the Nuggets tie this up. Then all of a sudden, Denver takes the lead. Okay, the series is over in 6. Then it gets to game 7. Okay, Denver's up by 20. This game is over, and then we see Minnesota rally back and pick up the victory. Point I'm trying to make is I can't recall the last time I have seen a series of this caliber of competition flip literally on a dime. Again, going back to what I said, we can only go off of what we see, right? This series looked like it was over multiple times in favor of both teams.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. If I try to even think about it, like the only thing that comes to mind is remember some of those old Celtics-Lakers series where one team would blow the other one out. And, I can remember vividly the Memorial Day Massacre where one team would blow the other one out. They get momentum, they go up a game in the series or even 2 games in the series, and then somehow, some way, the basketball gods bless us with a furious comeback and it goes back and forth. But really, to your point, this was probably one of the more unpredictable series, sign me up for another one of these next year. And not to get ahead of myself, but please sign me up again because I would love to see this.
Yeah, and I think that this is going to be something that we see over the next few years. I think it's also important to mention, if you didn't catch Game 7 last night, Jokic had himself a night, Jamal Murray had himself a night, but it was the role players. That's who failed the Denver Nuggets, right? It's almost as if they role reversed with the Los Angeles Lakers going back to Game 1. It was the role players that came up short for LA in that series, and it was the role players last year that really propelled Denver. We saw Michael Porter Jr. have a coming out party. We saw Aaron Gordon completely dominate at times. Bruce Brown was another guy that came up huge for this Nuggets team last year. When you take a look at the bench scoring 5 points, that's all they got last night. They got 5 points. When you take a look at Gordon and Porter combining for 11 points, they barely cracked 10 rebounds combined. That's where Denver lost this series. I don't think you got to be a basketball guru to just say, hey, look, the supporting role players did not step up for Jokic and Murray last night. That's where Denver lost this game.
You're exactly right. Honestly, you just hit that on the head. There's really not even that much for me to add to it. But what I will say is, you know, it's crazy to me. Michael Porter Jr. in the series before this against the Lakers, I feel like he did not miss a three-pointer the entire time. He, you know, like those semi-transition trail threes or just swing-around threes, he was money every single time. He starts off this series and plays pretty well those first few games. But if I'm not mistaken, I do not have the numbers in front of me, so please forgive me if I'm one or two off. If I'm not mistaken, he went 10 for 36 those last four games of the series, and that in itself makes a huge difference. The adjustments that Minnesota made in terms of, you know, either whether it was rotating better or quicker, or, you know, simply shading them or making them uncomfortable, made a significant difference. You know, to the point, as well, Aaron Gordon starts off, the series incredibly well. He's crushing them from the dunker spot. I think that was game three, or it was either game three or four where he had that, like, 12 for 12, or he was 12 for 12 at one point. But once again, the Minnesota Timberwolves, stuck to their principles, paid stricter attention to certain things that was working for the Nuggets in that stretch. And honestly, like I said, it really just a testament to them. But you're exactly right. When the role players don't show up, it really does not matter. You know, your stars can be stars. In a series, you're not going to win without your supporting cast.
Again, Jabari Davis joining us right now as we talk Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, Western Conference Semis, I should say. Jabari, now with Minnesota moving on, I do want to talk about the roster construction here, because a year ago, it looked like the trade that Minnesota had pulled with the Utah Jazz was going to be a disaster. It wasn't working. Gobert and Towns wasn't really meshing. They go out, they get Mike Conley, and maybe he's the glue guy. I know we're talking about Ant all the time, and rightfully so, but even last night, Mike Conley wasn't highly efficient from the field. But he affects the game in so many different avenues. I believe he had the largest plus-minus deficit of any player last night, plus 14 for Minnesota. This is not a young team like Oklahoma City, right? We look at the Thunder, we look at the process. Those are young guys trying to find their way. The process is real in the NBA. When you take a look at this Minnesota Timberwolves roster, they may be new here to the equation. They may be new to the Western Conference Finals, but they got some savvy vets that have really propelled this team, and I think that gets a little bit overlooked based off of what we've seen from Edwards.
That's absolutely a testament to that front office. That's absolutely a testament to these guys sticking to their principles and truly believing in what they were building there. It doesn't lie. Now that guy that you just mentioned, it doesn't hurt when you got that. When you got that guy at 22 years old, not even close to the peak of his powers, it will make you believe, hey, you know what, maybe we can do this. But it also does not hurt when you have an organization that doesn't necessarily march to the to the normal beat and does things their own way. You referenced it earlier. When they made that trade, I made fun of it because, let's be real, that was a lot. That was a lot to give up for your Rudy Gobert. But you know what matters? The only thing that matters is they saw it. They recognize that even though we are mortgaging the foreseeable future in terms of draft capital, we have the opportunity to to be the game changers. And you know what? While a decade of small ball or smallish ball was fun, I'm also happy that this game continues to be a progressive league. It continues to be a cyclical league. And you know what? Give me the big lineups. Give me big to big action. Give me the staggered. Give me this again, because you know what? I love it. It reminds me of a time that is lost, and I'm absolutely here for it.
No, I agree. I think I agree with everything you just said. Do you know what else was nice last night? A 98-90 game, a decisive game, and I think that's more common maybe than we give credit to, especially in the postseason. We're not seeing 130 to 120 games, but that game last night just had a vibe of something that would have come out of early 2000s basketball.
Like I said, sign me up for it. And yep. And there are some folks that are going to listen to this and say, oh, listen to these old heads harkening back to times of the past. I mean, heck, I let out with, oh, yeah, it reminds me of Celtics Lakers from the 80s. But the reality is the reality. I have nothing against the way that the game has progressed. I have nothing against the way that the offense. It's fun. I get it. But give me a rough and tumble, hard fought game somewhere around 100 points or 105 points or however many, and I will take that every time.
Does this make Minnesota the odds-on favorites in your mind?
You beat the champs, and you beat them in that manner. You're at least in the conversation. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Boston and what they've done over the course of this year. Really, what they've done over the course of this stretch. If I'm not mistaken, Tatum has made the Eastern Conference Finals 6 times in his first 8 years in the league, or 6 times over the last 8 years, or something along those lines. So, you know, I'm not taking anything away from them. I would feel a heck of a lot better about their chances if you were to tell me exactly what the status of Porzingis is. Now, bear in mind, I have not seen the most recent updates. I did not look this morning, but as far as the last thing that I saw was that they hope to have him back at some point, you know, like over this stretch. If you tell me he's going to be there and he's going to be 100%, which, you know, like that's not a realistic, you know, like a request. But if you could somehow tell me that he's going to be there, I would say that Boston probably still should be the favorite, even though deep down, personally, and as well as professionally, I would be picking Minnesota because, you know, let's be real, it's never going to be Boston here, guys.
I can get behind that. We'll talk about the matchup now for Minnesota. They get the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas picks up a 117-116 win over Oklahoma City. I thought there were some interesting decisions late in this game by OKC, but I'm going to go back to what I said a few moments ago. Regardless of scrutinizing, you know, some coaches' decisions late, fact of the matter is this is a team that's ahead of schedule. This is a young club, but I think we got to give Dallas a lot of credit. This is a team that seems to be meshing. I thought this would be a short series in favor of OKC because Luka Doncic didn't even look remotely close to being healthy going back to game one. I thought this was going to be short. Luka's been dynamic. Kyrie's been dynamic. Washington's been dynamic. And watching the Dallas Mavericks get back to the Western Conference Finals against Minnesota, if you're a fan of Parity Jabari, you have to love what you're seeing in the Western Conference.
For the first, you know, like I was going to take it league wide, but yeah, in the Western Conference, give you, I have no problem with this. Look, I'm never too, you know, too large of an individual, you know, no pun intended here, but you know, to acknowledge that I am wrong, and I will tell you, much like some others, a lot of others even, I looked at the, you know, yeah, they're going to still keep trying this Kyrie and Luka thing, you know, like, you know, over the summer. You know, now the reality is they didn't really have a better alternative, but I did not see it necessarily come into fruition in this manner. They go into the season, they have all types of expectations. You know, they got the Grant Williams situation there. That doesn't necessarily work, but they are able to push. They are able to push eject midway through and at the deadline. You know, truly bolster this roster, not just bolstering it with additional talent in the, you know, in the form of Gafford and Washington, but also getting rid of somebody that, for whatever reason, did not fit there. So credit to them, you know, much like I just gave credit to Minnesota, credit to them for putting together a roster. Now, I could always take a dig and say, like, man, imagine this roster if they had Jalen Brunson on it, but then again, you'd say, well, then they wouldn't have Kyrie. But that's neither here nor there. They've done a good job. I was gonna poo-poo and say they've done a solid job. No, they've done a good job of building what I see as at least a championship-contending roster. And you know what? Kudos to them.
They did it with Tim Hardaway being completely awful in the Western semis. He was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, he's no, you know, it's kind of like in Minnesota. Like, anytime I see Kyle Anderson on the floor, and no disrespect to him, you know, Shlomo, got love for you. But anytime I see him on the floor, I'm like, what are we doing here? That's kind of how I felt about Tim Hardaway Jr. in this series. And you know what? That's crazy to say because he's had some at least decent moments for them in the postseason over the last few years.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Jabari, I know we spent most of the time talking about the Western Conference. I do have one question for you, though, on the East before we part ways here. The Indiana Pacers yesterday, absolutely incredible. You want to talk parity? Okay, here's another squad that has made just a fantastic run throughout the postseason. I know there were some injury questions with New York, but the fact of the matter is this team shot 67% from the field in a closeout game. It's never been done in the NBA. It's never been done in a playoff game. It was a clinic, to say the least. It was a clinic.
Look, I have wanted to write the Pacers off for the last two series. I'm not going to do that anymore. So as much as I was, you know, like talking Boston up and saying like they should be at least in the conversation as the favorites, I'm not going to write this. I'm not going to cast any aspersions against this Indiana Pacers team. I thought they were probably a year or two away, but you know what? Sometimes you just never know when that, you know, when that flip switches or when the circumstances, you know, create themselves to where a young, hungry team like this Indiana Pacers team can push through. And you know what? much like I gave credit to Dallas and much like I gave credit to the Timberwolves, credit to the Indiana Pacers, credit to them for not just putting this together, you know, like ahead of the year, but for going out and making the deal that I actually did not see coming and grabbing Pascal Siakam, just ahead of the deadline. He wasn't incredible for them in the second half of the year as he was getting adjusted and as guys were getting adjusted to him and as Tyler Halliburton was returning from injury, but he was very, very good for them in that first series, and he was great for them in this series and in that game seven in order to get them to advance. So look, the Pacers are here, the Celtics are here, the Pacers are here. This is going to be a phenomenal, I'll say, conference final series on both sides, and I can't wait to get them started.
He's Jabari Davis, kind enough to take the time out to join us. Jabari, before I let you go, let us know what you've been up to and where we can find more of your work.
Like I always say, man, thank you so much for having me. This is a great time. I feel like we do this every playoffs, yeah. And I'm here for it. Find me, Jabari A. Davis on Twitter. If you like comedy and you like NBA and you don't take yourself too seriously as a fan and you just want to celebrate the league, check out Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties every week wherever you get your podcasts.
Jabari, always a pleasure. I can't wait to do it again. Always great to hear from you. Always great to get you on the show.
Truly my pleasure. Thank you, Jordan.
It's great to get Jabari Davis back here on the show. Fun to talk some Western Conference basketball. Last night was wild, to say the least. We're going to pause one more time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.